Welcome, everyone. My guest today for this sponsored episode is Blake Gibson, the head of product, legal, and compliance at Dark Matter Technologies, to talk about AI, how mortgage companies are leveraging it, while also keeping an eye on the regulations and potential risks. Blake, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Sarah. It's so great to be here.
It is great to have you on, and especially to talk about something that I am super interested in, I know our audience is very interested in, and that is really artificial intelligence and how you're using it. So let's just kick off and say, you know, give us kind of the broad overview of how the landscape, the AI landscape has changed over the last year.
Yeah, sure. So the whole game has changed because of AI, in my opinion. In the past year, we've seen a massive increase in Gen AI and a wide adoption of AI as standard equipment, not just a mythological vision you see on the sci-fi channel, but reality, right? Also, it's still a very, very young technology. One of the most famous applications we have today of AI in our daily lives is self-driving cars, right? Like a Tesla. The auto industry puts automobiles on five levels of autonomy, five being fully autonomous, one being, you know, you're driving yourself, right? Tesla is only a level two, right? So it shows that we have a very young technology out there and a lot of room to grow. I'll tell you a story too, one of my favorite recent stories about AI, just to illustrate how it's changing. I have a fourth grade daughter. She had a school project due a few weeks ago. She had to make a diorama of a scene from her school book, Wind in the Willow. And then she had to take that and record a video of her walking her teacher through the diorama and had to tie it back to the book. So she and my wife worked hard, created this beautiful diorama of a riverbank. And then I, like any good father, you know, stepped in at the end and took credit, right? So I took a photo of it. I Googled AI software to animate still image. I found a great tool called Runway ML. And in 20 minutes, I had the image updated. It morphed from a still scene to, you know, real water lapping at the bank. The little raft was floating on the stream. Wind was blowing the grass. The sun started setting. And we included that snippet at the end of the video when she uploaded it. I think it's a great example of AI. I have no artistic talents. I can't draw a straight line for the life of me. I have no clue how to animate images. I lack that ability. And I have no training in software animation, right? However, AI made me super dad. I could see where I wanted to go, but I couldn't quite get there by myself. So AI bridged the gap. It gave me talent, gave me ability, and I required no additional training, 20 minutes and success. And I'm pleased to report the AI-enabled Gibson family did indeed get an A-plus on that exam. So again, the value of AI, augment skills, speeds up tasks. And I go as far to say as that AI is actually changing who we are. It's going to make massive impacts to society. The NVIDIA CEO recently said in the conference, hey, parents, don't teach your kids how to code. It's a waste of time. AI is going to do it for them. So for sure, you know, some of the changes are going to be difficult to accept, but by and large, I think it's going to be better all around. I'm excited about it.
I am too. I also think that I've been interviewing tech executives every week, right, for my Housing Stack newsletter. And I ask them every single one about AI. And I think to a person, one of the things that's been so striking is the pace of change in AI over, especially consumer focused, maybe generative AI over the last year. Like it started out one way and we ended up the year in a completely different place. And just that sort of, you know, ability to change and grow and do more things so rapidly to me is a big game changer that maybe people who aren't involved with it all the time don't understand.
You know, it feels overwhelming, right? It feels like every time you pick up the news or get another podcast invitation that something changed, right? And you have to learn something else new. The technology changed or the output changed. And a trend we're seeing too is an OpenAI, the founder of ChatGPT is a big proponent of this. It's not just AI, but they're coupling AI with virtual agents, right? So something to actually take the AI, click the mouse, move the screen forward, and actually make it applicable to people's lives in a more direct way versus it just kind of being out there as a tool people could use. It actually integrates it into people's lives. So again, yeah, it's changing. Times are changing.
Times are changing. Well, let's talk specifics about Dark Matter Technologies and how you guys are leveraging AI.
Yeah, sure. So we love AI at Dark Matter. It's one of the things which really attracted me to the company. So I'll tell you a little bit about how we think about AI, little about our team and maybe some of our products as well. So at AI for Dark Matter, when we think about it, we have a philosophical rubric we use. We put AI on one of three levels. The first level is the base level, we call the worker level. That's stare and compare data entry type tasks. The second level is the chief of staff level. So curation of facts, numbers, info, exercising, you know, a little discretion, not a lot, but producing analytics and assistance to aid the decisioning process. And that third level, we call the decisioning level. In our industry, it would look like taking the underwriter out and putting the machine in and having that be automatic. We've made a business decision at Dark Matter. We're not going to play on level three. We think that's just not the right application of the technology today as it exists. Again, going back to it being a young technology. But we think with those first two levels, the worker level and the chief of staff level, we have a lot of ability to upskill our employees and our customers' employees. We use the joke, we're making centaurs, half man, half AI. And that's been where we've been focusing. So I'll tell you a little bit about our team too. So we take our job, you know, very seriously at Dark Matter, but we're having a ton of fun too. We know our software is being used today to serve millions of borrowers in the U.S. You know, some of the largest banks in the world are our clients. We know that AI will be table stakes in 5 years or less for these customers and frankly, for their customers too, right? And so it's nice to be kind of ahead of the curve with Dark Matter. Our CEO, Rich Galliano, he has a great reputation for being a guy who can get stuff done and a great guy, but he also is a visionary and he had the idea to buy an AI company 6 years ago. So we've had this 6-7 year head start. On our team, we have dozens of data scientists. Many have multiple degrees, two or even PhDs. And we believe that you can't just take AI off the shelf and use it. You actually have to make it your own and work with it. We even have several patents pending. So talking about our products in particular, the majority of our AI investment today is in our product called Ava Docs. Ava Docs is designed to solve our customers' needs to classify documents, extract data, and understand what the borrower submitted, right? So much more than OCR, it takes these flat PDFs and brings them to life. You know, we all know the U.S. mortgage industry is very, very doc intensive, right? Underwriters are known for having blisters on their fingers for the number of documents they flip through in a day. We fixed that. No more blisters, no more calluses. And Ava Docs has reviewed hundreds of millions of documents. I'm not aware of any AI tool out there that's trained on that many mortgage documents. And then again, to go back to my earlier comment about the AI agents, we couple our AI tool, Ava Docs, right, with a whole line of Ava products. One example is Ava BI, which is our analytics platform, Ava Rule, which is our rules engine. And that's just it's a fantastic product and really important to couple deterministic rules engines. And by that, I mean, you know, if then, then that statements, right? So it's something you can trace the question to the answer with flow. But it's very complex. Like one of our rules alone triggers 2,106 subrules, right? So these are very complex engines. And then the product I'm most excited about, at least when we're talking about the application of AI, is our Ava Assist line. That's the UI UX layer to bring together multiple data sources, conditions, tasks, AI, rules engines, and to roll that loan manufacturing process forward with true exception-based processing. We're also obviously investing in some projects I'm not going to talk about today. Maybe if you have me back in a few months, we can talk about those. We try to keep it a little bit quiet on those groundbreaking ideas, but it's just a lot of fun.
No, I understand that. So I do have some questions because, you know, when you think about like, this isn't just document scraping, this isn't just OCR, right? They're taking that information and they're not just, the AI is taking that information. It's not just putting it somewhere else. But I guess I'd like to dig in, like, how much decisioning is the AI doing? Like, from your perspective, is it just giving the underwriters more information or is it doing some of that lifting for them?
It is. So our rubric, again, is we try to say we'll take the hard work off the backs of the underwriters as an example. So we want an underwriter to focus on the topics which really require some level of discretion or you know, understanding or, you know, negotiation sometimes even, right? So if we can work the process, say we get the 200-300 pages of documents in from the borrower, if the AI, which ours does, goes in there, reviews the documents, assesses the content, places it in the right fields in the system, compares and contrasts that back to what the borrower input themselves, and says, hey, we have a problem, or yeah, the truth matches with the input. And then the underwriter can focus on just the exceptions, right? And Ava Assist, as an example, you know, puts that all on a platter. They can see multiple columns. They can see the you know, inputs from different data sources to say, yeah, we've got a problem here, or no, everything is just, you know, great, and press next. So again, trying to put the exception-based processing workflow in the world and really make that a reality.
So that leads into my next question. One of the big things that companies have to decide is, what is the balance between human and automation? You know, in mortgage, what should it be? What's the goal there? I've talked to people who are like, the goal is absolutely 100% automate it, get the people out of the process. I have other people who are like, the people are super important in the process. Like, where does dark matter technologies draw that line?
Yeah, we fall in that latter camp, saying the human cannot be supplanted, at least not in the next 5-10 years, or maybe even in our careers, right? We still think they're incredibly important. So what I think automation can do, it can enhance efficiency, it can make a more accurate process, but it can't replace that human touch expertise that the underwriters provide, or the processors or closers. So automation can help with data verification, doc processing, even risk assessment and compliance. But I think you need humans still for things like, you know, judgment calls, negotiation, you know, relationship building, right? You still have to have that interaction with the consumer. So going back to Ava Assist as an example, we don't view Ava Assist as underwriting or replacing the underwriters. Our focus is, we can take the underwriter and make his or her job easier. We can help him or her make more money for their employer. So if they're underwriting 2-3 loans a day, let's help them underwrite 10 to 15 loans, less time, less brain damage, focus on the exceptions, get home to their family and friends with a little bit more energy. You know, I was reading on Reddit the other day, a post by an underwriter, one of those ask me anything type posts, and they got a tough job. They're stressed, and this is a tough market to work in, and we need to provide tools for them. They're one of the most critical processes. We got to make them centaurs, right? We got to actually help them out and find ways to make their job easier while helping the bank close more loans and be more efficient in the process.
How do you, when you think about your staff, you talked about, you know, how you guys, you like to have fun. You're also doing this really important work. So when you see the pace of change in technology, specifically in AI, how do you encourage innovation? How do you have a staff and nurture your staff so that they're ready to shift with these really rapid changes?
Yes, it's a great question. So there's an old adage, you hire smart people and get out of their way. I do not believe in that. I think you hire smart people and then knock down barriers they can't knock down themselves. So in my role at Dark Matter, as an example, making sure they have the right tools, helping foster a culture of curiosity and experimentation, collaboration. We have a very close partnership with Amazon Web Services. They're going to be speaking at our user conference in a couple sessions, one being on AI. They're a thought leader. And we work with them, provide them access to our team, and our team access to them, to really tune our use of the tools to a very effective way. And then we listen to our customers, right? Our customers are quite excited about this. You know, everybody's trying to take, you know, days off the loan manufacturing process and reduce the number, which is only increasing, right? It's when I started in the mortgage industry full time 12 years ago, it was actually cheaper to originate a loan than it is today. And so if we can help stakeholders at our customers identify these key areas, we actually bring in our AI team directly to talk to the customers so they can hear from them directly. And that gives this, you know, instant feedback loop between the AI team and our customers, so we can really understand what's happening, produce thought leadership, articles, content, white papers for our customers. So we really have that level of interaction between our customers and our partners like AWS.
So, you know, one of the things that we see in the mortgage industry is, when it comes to technology, there's sort of the haves and the have-nots. And so much of the mortgage industry is, you know, small shops, mom and pop shops. From your perspective, what, you know, are there ways that those shops can either partner with you guys or on their own? Like, can AI, is AI within their reach? Is leveraging AI in these ways with something they can do? Or is this just something that big companies are thinking about?
No, I think it's both big and small. We, again, having the resources in our staff and not just relying on third-party plugins, that helps our customers build the gap. And we talk about data science as a service, right? So we can actually help educate our customers of all sizes. In my mind, you know, that's a really neat differential, because when you partner with Dark Matter, we can give you access to people who not are just AI smart, but also know the industry. You know, it's a dual skill set that's kind of tough to find these days. And so we actually were on site with a customer just in the past week who would qualify in the realm of a smaller institution, and they want AI. And so we're able to bring in our experts, talk to them about our products. Ava Assist was obviously the solution for them. And it doesn't require you to replace your whole tech stack, right? You can just plug in this product, have the AI tools, you know, the right data to the right people at the right time.
I feel like that's going to be a game changer, because, you know, if you have to make a huge investment right now, if you have to, you know, shift everything you've ever done, as opposed to, like, you know, you can take part of this and it can come in and optimize everything that you already have. To me, that's a big difference.
Yeah. And I'd add to that too, is limited to no training, right? Going back to my example about my daughter's diorama, I didn't know how to use, you know, image animation skills, right? And that's the analogy I'm using internally with us at Dark Matter, is let's take that heavy load off the customer of really understanding how these algorithms and LLMs work. Let's give them that tool where they can enjoy the benefits of AI without the, you know, the brain damage of trying to get there.
Yeah, really good point. Because especially right now with limited staff in the mortgage you know, industry, it's not like you're like, oh, let me bring on my animation expert to help, or let me bring on this person who can absolutely do something completely new. It's like, no, your current staff has to figure this out.
Right. And that's why we're trying to, you know, deploy Centaurs, right? And we know too that when it's such a tough mortgage market right now, some of our clients are actually having struggles hiring people too. And so when you have somebody who's coming in, who's maybe, you know, new to the mortgage process, having the AI angel on their shoulder to marshal them through their day, that's super important, right? Again, no to low training, don't replace your tech stack. It just works. These are core principles to our AI deployment strategy.
So all of this sounds really good. One of the things we always have to think about in mortgage is the regulatory side, right? So we keep hearing about potential regulatory actions or restrictions on the use of AI. So I would ask you, you know, what does that mean? And what should the mortgage industry consider for the near future when it comes to that?
Yeah, that's another really good question and incredibly important for our customers. And we've seen some customers actually deploy full AI teams to try to answer those questions prophetically, because the U.S. market has not yet acted in a way that gives people a roadmap as to what is going to happen next. So when I think about, you know, well, why is there this need for regulations? Well, there are real safety concerns with AI, even in our industry. There's concepts like hallucinations we'll see in Gen AI. There's bad actors. There's bias at the algorithm level. There are model drifts. So again, not just bad acts, but there could be poor programming or poor hygiene that pushes us in the wrong direction from a model or algorithm standpoint. And again, trust is not there yet by both the regulators and the markets. You know, some Gen AI demos are outpacing reality. You know, Google got caught recently, right? One of their videos for their big product launch, they faked it. It just wasn't really a real video. It was a, you know, simulated video. And so that really erodes trust from the players. So just drilling down on one example, which would be model bias, right? So what if the underwriter is going through his or her day, AI is turned on in the background, and the underwriter is going to deny maybe 10% of the loans coming in front of her. The AI is watching that, and the AI is trying to draw conclusions based on the docs, the information, and the decisions of the human. And what if it says, you know what, I noticed across most of the loans this underwriter denied, it was a Caucasian under the age of 40. And then the algorithm says, Caucasian under 40, no loans for you, right? And it actually has this they call it a biased feedback loop. So that can be caused by a poor algorithm, by bad training data, not enough training data, or simply lack of curation. So from a technical perspective at Dark Matter, to prevent against things like that happening, we put guardrails in. And this is pretty popular in the OpenAI ChatGPT space. They call it a system card. So it protects against, you know, you committing fraud or self-harm or something like that. It actually has prohibitions on what ChatGPT can do. We had those as well in our industry for things it should and shouldn't do, right? The AI should not help the consumer commit fraud against the bank. That would be bad. Also, we couple our AI with things like our virtual assistants, right? Those deterministic rules engines. And then we have a constant curation of the data being reviewed. So yes, we have a very large, you know, hundreds of millions of documents that our AI has reviewed, but then we have human curation and quality control on top of that. So it helps prevent that model drift, right? It helps kind of keep the model in the right lane and improving versus making hallucinations or having a bias inherent to the model. So not all companies are doing that, right? Not all companies are taking that time to invest it. They kind of deploy and hope for the best. That's why we have AI regulations. So looking at just kind of the global sphere first, in March 13th, so just a few weeks ago, the European Parliament acted and they passed the Artificial Intelligence Act. It's the first multi-country comprehensive AI regulatory framework in the world. And there's been a few countries and agencies which have done some small work, but this is truly the first real act. It categorizes AI from high risk or unacceptable risk to low risk. It has all types of rules about risk categories, and it also focuses on ways that they can mitigate consumers' interactions with AI. So for instance, a label that says you're talking to a Gen AI bot, it labels for deepfakes and stuff like that. And that act comes into effect in May. So it's almost here, right? What's really important to understand about the European AI Act, as we think about American laws and where American agencies could come, is the European Act is not just regulating the use or the application of AI, but the underlying technology itself, which is a really important distinction. So if they had passed a law which says you cannot make deep fakes, that's one thing, but they went much further than that. They said you cannot make deep fakes like this, and your model has to have this type of explainability and this type of approach and this and that, right? So there's all these restrictions on the actual technology itself. You know, much like the privacy laws in Europe versus the privacy laws in America, I do expect a lower level of government entanglement there, but it's still going to happen. And, you know, there's quite a few agencies in the U.S., the whole alphabet soup, right? You have the GSEs, interagency, OCC, DOJ, CFPB, FTC, just, you know, fill in the blank, right? You know, they're out there. So we have four agencies today that have already made a joint statement saying, you know, we're going to be watching it, which is the DOJ, CFPB, EEOC, and FTC. So, right, so entities which regulate us. They're going to be watching for misuse of data. They're going to be watching for the model being opaque. They're going to be watching for, you know, bad design and bad use. And there's already starting to see some, like, New York Department of Finance Services is acting. So everybody seems to be focusing and converging on this one topic, which is explainability. So let me kind of break down explainability. We call it XAI for short. So an AI model is explainable if its expected impact and potential biases can't be understood. This XAI concept highlights, you know, accuracy, fairness, and transparency in the outcomes of AI-powered decisions. What makes it really important, well, I'll give you an example, right? So take a self-driving car. If that self-driving car had an accident, having the ability to go back and see, well, why did the car make this decision? Why did it go left versus right, slow down, speed up? And then to test whether that decision was reasonable, so they can prevent future accidents and errors, right? So this is a concept of XAI and not having black boxes. The idea is to have a transparent box or a glass box where you can look through the box and say, you know what, this is a reasonable outcome based upon this input. And you don't get a opaque view that says, well, something happened and we don't know what or why, here's the output. You know, that's pretty scary for regulators. There's a counterbalance there, though. So companies like us, tech vendors, we want to protect our trade secrets. We've invested, you know, tens of millions of dollars into our AI, and we don't want to necessarily open the algorithm up for everybody to look at because it's quite proprietary. So as an example, at Dark Matter, we've actually built dashboards where they can see that it's going to require a data scientist to look at this. This is very complex, but they can see, you know, conditioned outputs, parameters for outputs, how an input is taken through a system, different statistical methods which are applied, et cetera. And they can get a high level of confidence if you're a reasonable skill in the industry to understand the why behind things. So regulators are going to be saying, hey, vendors, create glass boxes. We want to see, we want to look inside and see what's happening here. So it's a fair question for clients, fair question for regulators. Again, AI, immensely powerful, but with that power comes the risk, and you can't ignore the limitations, bias, unreliability, et cetera. So it's important to have this open discussion with both the regulators and our customers to explain, these are the risks we see, here's how we're going to mitigate these risks, and here's how you can adopt AI and be successful in your organization.
Well, and it feels like before the, you know, yes, it's important to do that for the regulators, but it feels like companies are already going to have to be doing that for themselves. I mean, they don't, you know, you're not going to get good outcomes unless you can understand what it's doing and why. And you can, like you said, you have humans looking and saying, you know, is this reasonable? Is this being trained right? Is this the outcome that we want? So you're already going to have to build that internally. And then it's maybe, you know, figuring out how to share that with other people without, you know, giving away the whole shop.
Right, right. And to your question about, you know, smaller entities and how can they interact with this, maybe they don't have a data scientist on staff who can interpret what, you know, our team is saying. So going back to that rubric of worker level, chief of staff level, and then decisioning AI, we can say off the bat, there's no decisioning here. It's just chief of staff and workers. So we can help them understand the risk they're accepting and then go backwards in time and say, hey, here is how loans historically have been processed in our system. And here are your expected range of outcomes. So again, it's the education process. We really enjoy that. We think from whether it's a sales cycle, implementation, or even post-implementation, this constant education loop from us to our clients, and then this voice of customer back to us to inform our product decisions is just paramount.
Really interesting. Blake, this has been such an interesting conversation. I learned a lot. I know our listeners will as well. Thank you so much for coming on. And if people want to learn more, where should they go?
Yeah, dmatter.com is our website. You can find our information there about all of our products. And also on LinkedIn, I'm always happy to answer questions. So Sarah, thanks so much for your time.
Love it. Thank you. Thanks for listening to Housing Wire Daily. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to take a minute to rate the show or leave a comment. We'll see you back here on Monday for more news and insight.